You know, Shravia, we're usually ones to stray from commenting on appearances, but I gotta say, Shapo looks better with longer hair.
You are very right. I mean, the length has always suited him, and I'm quite glad he's been growing it out lately.
I might even dare say, the longer his hair, the longer his runs in tournaments.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hold On To Your Racket, the podcast for Gen Z tennis fans. We're your hosts, Josefina
and Shravia.
Shravia and I are so excited to be creating this podcast and sharing our love for tennis with you all.
Josefina and I are two high school gals and tennis fanatics, united together by our on-the-court and off-the-court companionship.
And we're the female Gen Z voices in modern-day tennis you've been looking for, so we hope you enjoyed this episode and stay tuned for more. So, welcome to another episode of Hold On To Your Racket. This is episode 95. We are closing in on that big 100, which will be very exciting. But yeah, a lot has been going on with Shravi and I lately. We recently started coaching, actually, which has been...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's been crazy, but it's been great.
It's super fun. Yeah. It's very fun. Josefina and I get to do a lot of classes together. So it's just nice, you know, another way to get involved in, like, the tennis world, aside from playing and podcasting. It's now coaching. And it's a lot of fun. I don't know. But we've also had our fair share of hilarious interactions with the kids that we coach. Josefina and I coach mostly, like, really little kids, which is a lot of fun. So this last weekend, the lead coach had to set something up, so he was like, you two just like take care of them for a couple minutes. So they were all lined up by the net, and so Josefina just threw out as a little conversation starter, so who's your guys' favorite tennis player? And they were all silent, after which we realized, okay, maybe these kids are a little too young to actually know that much about professional tennis. But then there was this one kid who had the funniest answer.
Yeah, so, and mind you, they're like 4 through 6, so I don't even know how much they know about anything, actually. But he said, what about the one that got kicked out because he didn't get vaccinated, while pointing to, like, you know, where they jab you? That's what made me laugh the most.
Then, wait, I didn't even notice that
part.
Yeah,
he was pointing to, like, where they vaccinate you, and he's like, the one that didn't get vaccinated. And then Shrav and I looked at each other, we're like, we know exactly who you're talking about. We're like, Novak Djokovic? He goes, yeah, that one.
Like, it's funny that this is the reputation he's might have for, like, kids this age at this point.
Yeah, it's insane. Like,
it was funny.
It was
definitely funny.
Yeah. So that was definitely interesting, and, you know, that gives you a perspective of how badly Novak messed up in recent months. Not even recent months, but, you know, we've gotten into it before. We'll not get into it again. But we have a couple of hot headlines to throw at you today. And the first one is very, very exciting.
Yes, so Naomi Osaka announced that she and her agent, Stuart Duguid, are starting their own agency. So she's leaving IMG. She spent 6 years there. I mean, IMG is one of the largest sports representation industries in the world. So to see that she, as, you know, the current highest paid female athlete in the world, really, you know, going on her own terms and launching her own sports agency, which she is calling Evolve, obviously with the help of her agent, is a really exciting business venture. She kind of, her agent spoke about how this is kind of like a step that she wants to take in wanting to have more control and say in what she does with her business and her sort of business ventures, and really personalizing it a bit more and having a bit more control over it. Because something that Josefina and I have mentioned a lot on the podcast is how tennis really is a great app, really empowering sport, especially for women, because of the financial opportunities, because you have that individualized control there, and because it is a pretty well-paying sport for those who really can make a good living off of it. And it's a great business opportunity. We saw Serena do that with Serena Ventures, like really stepping into the role of a businesswoman. So, and Sharapova has done similar things as well. So seeing these WTA players especially kind of be able to balance and invest in both their tennis athletic life and also their tennis business life is really cool.
Yes, it is. And it's just amazing, like, what she's willing to do to really, like, do life and do whatever she needs to do on her own terms. Just, like, not even, it's not even, like, thinking outside of the box. It's literally building your own box, which is crazy to me.
Ooh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and I don't know. I really admire her for it because it really shows that, like, and can we talk about the fact that she's been able to do this and continue to fight for other, like, not even women in the industry, just, like, athletes in general? Like, mm-hmm. even when she's been so transparent about her mental health, like, the fact that she's fighting through so much to do this for not only herself but others is just, like, it's amazing to me. So, yeah, very, very good news from her, and I'm so excited to see. And I don't know, maybe she can even, like, branch out and represent Hold On To Your Racket, so.
I mean, yeah, we wouldn't mind a little investment from Evolve. I think she put it best. She said, I've spent my career doing things my way, even when people told me that it wasn't what was expected or traditional. Evolve is the natural next step in my journey as both an athlete and businesswoman. I read a little New York Times article that her, where her agent spoke about kind like this next step and like creating Evolve, and he was like, you know, in the morning, like, Naomi is training, she meets with her physios, she does all of that, she has lunch, and then the rest of the day she's always thinking about her cultural involvement, her business involvement, like, what can she be doing off the court with her career and with her platform. And it's really refreshing to see that, you know, focus. And I think it's like something that is really an inspiring area for athletes, especially younger athletes and female athletes, to have this outlet beyond just your field, like where you're playing and training and your athletic capabilities, because there's this opportunity for financial mobility to really fight for causes you care about, invest in causes and businesses you care about. So very exciting to see people like Naomi, people like Serena, taking the reins on that. I would even put, like, things like even smaller, like Coco Gauff's, like, American Eagle collab, which we talked about a while ago, like, as another similar sort of business venture.
Yeah. And
in terms of.
Yeah. And especially, like, at such a young age also. Like, can we talk about the fact that, like, Naomi was only 24 years old and doing this? That is insane to me. But we have other good news as well. So Joanna Konta, if you don't remember her, she retired in December of 2021 and she is pregnant. So she announced it on Instagram on Friday that she's pregnant with the caption, busy baking my own little muffin right now. And with a picture of her holding her belly in front of a beautiful home, by the way. I think I sent a picture to Shravi and I was like, look how beautiful this home is. Because that's honestly, well, here's the thing with me. I have this bad habit of reading captions before I see the photos. So I read the caption. I was like, oh my God, a cute photo of her baking. I'm so excited to see this. I love baking photos. And then I saw the photo. I'm like, wait, what's going on? And then I saw the comments and I was like, oh, that's what's happening. Yay. So, yeah.
Yes, congrats to her. You know, she did retire in December, but it's nice to see players kind of coming into a new phase of their life because, you know, there's so much more to a person than just the sport that they play or their career. Our last little hot headline, it's not really new. We just didn't mention it in the last episode, which is about Roger Federer announcing his comeback, which I think for Josefina and me is both something exciting and something a little scary because we are very protective of him. We get scared, I think, when he's about to play matches recently because we're a bit scared of his little return. So he is going to be returning to the tour in Basel, which is his home tournament indoors in October. So that kind of seems to imply that he's skipping the grass season and all the Grand Slams then. But, I mean, I don't really know what to make of this. I was listening to the Body Surf discussion of, you know, his return. Could this be a farewell return? Could this be something just to gauge how much he has left in the tank and maybe he wants to, you know, use this as an opportunity to test himself? I'm going to have very low expectations. I am a little nervous. I'm just happy if he's happy.
Yeah, I guess. I'm also curious about what's happening with Laver Cup because he said he was returning and that's in September.
Yeah.
But also, yeah. Like, he said returning to the tour, which is, and Laver Cup is not part of the tour, so I don't know. I guess we'll see.
So we have quite a bit of clay tennis underway, especially at the 1,000 level. We had Madrid wrap up last week, and we're getting into Rome this week. So we just want to start with a little bit of a Madrid Open recap with both the WTA and the ATP before we get into some of the Italian action.
Yes, so before we get into it, like we said, we just have to talk about what we missed on the last episodes about Madrid, and that would be the finals. So in the WTA final, we had Ange Jabeur, the 8th seed, defeating Jessica Pegula, the 12th seed, 7-5, 0-6, 6-2, and oh my goodness, it is so great to see these two thriving again, especially Ange, who is a trailblazing queen. This is her second title and her first WTA 1000 title, and she's the first Arab winner of a WTA 1000 title or anything equivalent because you know, the terms were changed. And honestly, I was thinking about the fact, like, how conveniently we started the podcast, because like so much has happened since then. Like, we had the, especially with the WTA, with like the Hologic thing, with all the mental health initiatives, and the fact that the WTA and ATP have been, like, actively merging recently.
Have they, though? Like, have they? Or is it just a Tennis United video every once in a while?
Yeah, it's just, like, you know, the terminologies for the tournaments instead of, like, the Premier 7. We have, like, an actual, like, nice parallel between the two tours. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's just a lot going on.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, Ons is someone we've loved for a while. It's nice that she was finally able to put the pieces together. I think this is a really good confidence booster because people have been talking about this a lot with her, and especially to win something at this high of a level on a surface where she was really able to stand out. Like, this is really promising, and we'll see how she deals with that pressure. She is still in Rome, and we're going to talk about her in a little bit, but you know, some other standout players were Alexandrova and Teichmann. They were both semifinalists. And then we also had Simona Halep make it to the quarterfinals, which is also impressive because she's been having a pretty good year as well. Also with that coaching change. So we'll see how her clay season continues.
Yes. And then on the ATP side, we have Carlos Alcaraz, the 7th seed, defeating Alexander Zverev, the 2nd seed, 6-3, 6-1. It's just Carlos, you know? That's really all there is to say. He's like 100% by now the best player in the world. And yeah, he's only 19, and this is his second ATP Masters 1000 title, which is incredible, and he moved up 3 ranking spots with this win to a career high of number 6. And last year he hadn't even broken the top 100, and he was already speaking about the fact that he expected to break the top 10 by the end of the year. And wow, I mean, if you put your mind to it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, he's really, like, Gen Z is carrying the tennis world on its back right now. We've got Iga Świątek and Carlos Alcaraz, the standout players of the year already. They're ranked either number 1 or number 2, respectively, in the race of the year and finals. And it seems like the hype, they're really handling it well. They're both well deserving of it, and they're both handling it well, which is really important and extremely admirable. He is the youngest player in the history of the ATP to beat 3 top 5 players in one tournament, basically meaning that no other teenager has achieved this before. And he's also the first player to eliminate both Djokovic and Nadal at the same clay court event, which is no small feat. There was one more note we had written for Carlos Alcaraz that Josefina put down but conveniently skipped over. But let's just talk about the fact that more Carlos Alcaraz means more TV time for Juan Carlos Ferrero. And our eyes greatly appreciate that because that man is fine.
Top notch. You know, tippity top.
Yeah. Yep. Really, really appreciate the
Yes, Juan all the Carlos content. Ferreira because all the videos after Carlos wins are just like him and Juan like hugging or Juan crying. Like that's it. That's all that's going on over there.
And remember that little like 3-day period where Juan Carlos Ferreira was coaching Zverev and then he quit because he was like, this guy like does not have good like work ethic, like. Zverev does not have good work ethic. Look at what I mean. And now he goes and beats. Now he goes and beats Zverev in the final quite easily. It's just amazing.
Yep. Honestly, like one of the greatest coach like student partnerships ever. I just love this duo.
All right. I cannot believe this is the third time that we are covering this tournament. It is Rome, or as we like to call it, the Internazionale Biennale d'Italia. It is by far our favorite tournament name. It is crazy to think we're covering it for the third time. Obviously, the first time was like the COVID time. Last year was the infamous Iga Świątek double bagel in the final experience, and now we're in the 2022 edition. So we've wrapped up the round of 16 stage. All the quarterfinals are set, and we're gonna go through each half of each of the ATP singles draw and the WTA singles draw. But we want to preface this entire discussion with a really disappointing, disgusting, angering issue that we've actually been talking about for 3 years now, or like really 2.5. And that we actually pointed out in the very first time we covered this tournament in 2020, but only now has kind of been getting the attention of the tennis world a little bit more broadly, regarding Rome, which is their prize money discrepancy between the ATP and the WTA.
Yeah, so it's incredibly disappointing that it's happening in 2022, because this is literally what, you know, if we're talking grassroots, Billie Jean King fought for, but here we are. So the ATP players in this tournament are making more than double the prize money that WTA players are making. And note that these are both 1,000/, you know, masters level events on both sides. So they're the same level, like tier of events on both tours. And the fact that even with like the amount of like equal influence that both of these tournaments have, and the fact that they're happening at the same time in the same exact place, what is going on with the checks? Explain.
Yeah, I'm gonna just run through the 2022 prize money differences briefly, and then we're gonna kind of go into them a little bit more in a digestible way. So for example, the first round winner gets, on the WTA side, gets about €9,500, and the first round ATP winner gets over €21,500. Second round winner on the WTA side gets around €13,000. The second round ATP winner gets pretty much three times that at €39,000. Third round winner on the WTA side gets €23,000. Third round winner on the ATP side gets nearly 73,000, so that's over three times as much. Quarterfinalist on the WTA side gets 46,000. Quarterfinalist on the ATP side gets over 136,000. Semifinalist on the WTA side gets a little over 100,000, and the semifinalist on the ATP side gets pretty much 250,000, so that's about double. The finalist on the WTA side gets $195,000, and the finalist on the ATP side gets $456,000. So that's, again, over double. And then the champion on the WTA side gets €332,000, and the champion on the ATP side gets $836,000. So, I mean, this is oftentimes in the rounds, in the early rounds, nearly over triple the prize money. And then once we get to the later rounds, it is still more than double the prize money that the ATP players are getting.
Yeah. So, definitely interesting and horrible and disgusting, frankly. But, yeah, compared to the numbers from 2020 and 2021, it was actually better than it is now. Like, for some reason, like, the earlier rounds were basically the same, and then the notable differences were in the later rounds. In past years, for example, in 2020, the quarterfinalists on the ATP side would get €75,000, and then the WTA would get €38,000, which is a 40,000 difference compared to the €90,000 difference we have now. And then the semifinalists in 2020 would have a 20,000 difference compared to an 150,000 difference now in 2022. And then the finalists would have a 250,000 difference now.
Compared to none before.
Yeah, compared to no difference before. And it's just like, why? I just don't understand. Yeah. And I don't know, do you know if, like, the leaders of this tournament, like, the governing bodies of this tournament have spoken about this?
I haven't heard anything. This, like, barely made, like, that many headlines in the tennis news world anyway. Like, I couldn't find stuff online about this, but it was a lot on Twitter. And it's literally on the bottom of the draw. You can see prize money information, and this, the hard numbers are there. So, like, it's not like I could, like, there's no real explaining it. And it's been year after year that we see this difference. But, yeah, I mean, like, in previous years, you know, the kind of quarterfinal stage onwards, the prize money would be pretty similar. Still not equal, but pretty similar. They would kind of just have a big difference in the early rounds, which obviously hurts lower-ranked players. But now it's across the board, both early rounds and the later rounds. Like, you noted the finalist difference, but the winner, I mean, there used to be only a €10 difference in 2020. Now it's a €500,000 difference. Like, these are astounding numbers. Like, as you said, like, how can this sort of just, like, slide by and no one really care? I wonder why more of the players aren't talking about this. Mm-hmm. Like, I really would like to know more about
especially why that is. Especially since they're alone in this, which is what I find crazy. Like, how is nobody saying this and noticing this if this is the only tournament that's been doing this? And, like, probably the only big tournament. Like, this is a Masters or WTA 1000 tournament, one of the most prestigious tournaments in the world right now. And the fact that this is just happening without any backlash from not only the players, but just the governing bodies themselves is just insane to me, honestly.
Yeah. All right. So with that, we're going to keep an eye on that because that shouldn't fly. But let's go into the draws and the tennis that we have. So starting with the WTA, let's go and talk about the top half of the draw, which we have our players that are remaining being Iga Swiatek, Bianca Andreescu, Aryna Sabalenka, and Amanda Anisimova. So a lot of a mix between players who have been having really great seasons so far, like Iga and Anisimova, and also some players who've only recently sort of been getting into gear, like Bianca and Sabalenka.
Yeah, so as for upsets and, like, notable results, we have Bianca, who played Emma Raducanu in the first round. However, unfortunately, Emma retired from that match during the second set. But it definitely, since Emma was the kind of the seeded player in Bianca's little section, this did a lot for Bianca's results and kind of propelled her forward all the way to the quarterfinals now. And then Petra Martic, she upset the fifth seed, Annette Contivate, 6-2, 6-3. I know, very, very sad. But then Petra fell to Bianca, actually, in the, I believe, second round. Yeah, third round. And then, overall, Bianca has been playing so strongly, and she's now improving her round of 16 visit in Madrid. So, honestly, she's just, like, she came back, and now she's back on her way up, and it's amazing to see her performing at this high level again, even after such a long break.
Yeah. We also had some Americans doing well. So before falling to Amanda Anisimova, Danielle Collins, the 7th seed, got a really great win over Simona Halep in the second round. And in that same round, Anisimova upset Belinda Bencic, the 11th seed, which is a big win. And then afterwards, she obviously beat Danielle Collins. So Anisimova is another player who's been having a strong season. I'm really liking her composure and her poise. She made the Charleston semis, the Madrid quarterfinals, and then the quarterfinals in Rome. And don't forget, she reached the semifinals of the French Open in 2019. So she really does like the surface, and I really do like the game that she's been playing this year, especially this season. But looking towards the quarterfinals, our first one is Iga Świątek, the first seed, versus Bianca Andreescu. Iga, we didn't see her at Madrid. She was taking a bit of a rest, but she still has 25 wins in a row. Her form is looking good. It wasn't looking too great in her match versus Azarenka, but despite being down, I think it was 3-love in the first set, or maybe even 4-love, she pulled off a 6-4, 6-1 win against Victoria Azarenka in her match today. I mean, like, she knows how to fight and problem solve. And I mean, I still think she's the favorite for this matchup as well. But obviously, Bianca Andreescu, we know what she can bring. So if there is any chance for Iga to fall, this could very well be that match. Especially trying to think about what that showdown versus Azarenka is going to be making her think. Because it could either be like, wow, I can really fight through stuff, or like, wow, my form was looking pretty shaky there.
Yeah, that's true. And then the other quarterfinal is Sabalenka versus the third seed versus Anisimova. So Sabalenka actually fell to Anisimova in the second round of Madrid very recently. And, I mean, Anisimova just has some phenomenal momentum going into this match, especially considering, like, she's back on her way up. She had this, like, kind of stream of just, like, tragic events at the beginning of, was it this year or was it last year? Just
I think it was recently. Last year. Ever since she lost her dad, and then she got some injuries, and then, you know, there was a lot.
Yeah, it was just a lot in a row, so it's good that she's really on her way back up.
Yeah. She also has a 4-0 head-to-head against Aryna Sabalenka, so it's nice to see that Aryna is finally getting her groove this year. We saw that a little bit in, I think, I don't know if it was Stuttgart or Madrid. But I think Amanda is the Stuttgart. Favorite in this matchup.
Because she lost Stuttgart. To Iga in the final. Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes. As far as who we think is going to make it through this half of the draw, I mean, I think Iga Świątek is the obvious choice. Like, she's, you know, just the best player in the world by far right now. I think we can count on maybe seeing Anisimova in the semis just because of how she's been playing, the upset she's pulled off, her head-to-head versus Sabalenka, and how strong she is right now. And I'd like to see what challenge she can give to Świątek, but this is definitely a half of four really top players, and I don't think this would be... I think this is a good lineup we have.
Yeah, and I want to note that, like, how crazy it is. I mentioned this somewhere earlier in the episode, but, like, we started the podcast, like, simultaneously with Iga's rise, and look where she is now. Like,
you're welcome, Iga.
Yes, you're welcome. Yes, it's that, you know, it's the synergy. But now let's talk about the bottom half of this WTA draw in Rome. So the players remaining here are Ons Jabeur, the 9th seed, Maria Sakkari, the 4th seed. Why did I say it like a New Yorker? Ew. I said 4th. It's 4th. Then Jill Teichman and Daria Kasatkina. So then our notable results here are Jill Teichman defeating Plíšková, who was the defending finalist here, and Rybakina all in a row. And, I mean, look out for Jill because she's coming off of the Madrid semifinals, which is a very strong result. So she's really she's putting her foot down on clay.
Yeah. Another sort of dark horse to look out for is Daria Kazakina. She took out Leila Fernandez and Paula Badosa, and has had some other good wins on the clay so far this season. The Badosa upset is interesting because Paula has had a lot of points to defend this clay season and has had some pretty mixed results so far. She did okay in, I think, Stuttgart, or I think it was Stuttgart, but, you know, otherwise they've been pretty mixed, so I do wonder what this means leading up to the French Open, where she also has a lot of points to defend, because this is the surface that she excels at, so I'm not sure what's exactly going on there, so we'll see how she kind of prepares for the Grand Slam. We also had Garbina Muguruza growing out in her first match to Putintseva. She's been having a really rough season as well after winning the Guadalajara Championships at the end of last year. So she definitely needs something to change things up. She entered a WTA 250 event, actually, next week to get some matches under the belt before the French Open. So I hope that's a good choice for her. But we also had Maria Sakkari taking out Coco Gauff in two sets. And this is Sakkari's only her second win since the Indian Wells finals, so maybe she's finding her form back here, because a deep run here could definitely be a good opportunity for Maria to find some momentum before the French Open. She too has some points to defend there, reaching the quarterfinals, I believe, last year, but Ons Jabeur stands in the way before Sakkari can continue her run.
Yes, and then as for the quarterfinals we have here, we have Kazakina versus Teichman, so definitely both dark horses, but they're both, you know, coming off of very, very strong wins against top players, so it's going to be a tough match, and honestly, anyone can come out of this one, and both of them have a good chance at the at their semifinalists. Because on the other side, we have Jabeur and Sakkari as our quarterfinal, which, like, on Jabeur, she's looking so much stronger because she has the Madrid title very recently, as in the past week. So this could be a great opportunity for Jabeur to continue her amazing form. And for Sakkari to, you know, build some confidence before the slam, because it's like both of these WTA 1000s, Madrid and Rome, it's all in the lead up to the French Open. So whenever you see these results, you have to be thinking about what effect it would have on the results at the big Grand Slam at the end of the clay season.
Yeah, as far as who we think is going to make it out of here, I think the all eyes are on Ons Jabeur if she can keep that momentum going. She is the strongest one in this half, but there is that pressure there. My next pick would be Jill Teichman. I mean, she's been, you know, she also had a great week in Madrid, so let's see how she can, you know, continue that. I mean, I think she would rather be playing Kazakina than Paula Badosa at a later stage of a tournament. I don't know. But that's also just Badosa's form lately. But I think this is a good opportunity for Jill Teichman to have another deep run at a 1000-level event. But my eyes are on OJ.
Agreed. So now let's talk about the ATP side of this tournament, where we have on the top half Novak Djokovic, Felix Auger-Aliassime, Denis Shapovalov, and Casper Ruud still remaining in the top half of this draw. And can we talk about how FAA and Denis always travel in pairs?
And Bianca.
That's true. It's honestly
Layla got left out.
Oh, man. It's like whenever they have like one Canadian player, there has to be at least another one in the draw somewhere. But, yeah, so then upsets and notable results in this kind of section is Novak Djokovic defeated Stan Wawrinka in their 26th match against each other, 6-2, 6-2. And Novak Djokovic made zero unforced errors, which is insane,
But positives for Stan. He won back-to-back matches before this, which is great because, you know, gotta love some Stan the man. But, yeah, zero unforced errors is definitely scary going into, you know, the rest of the tournament. And then we had Dennis Shapovalov defeating Rafael Nadal 1-6, 7-5, 6-2. Hello.
Like, what? Like, I'm just, like, I was so ready as soon as I saw the breadstick. I was in the car. And I was like, okay, I know Josephine and I are going to be talking about this tonight and how this was kind of a flop, but that's okay. But then later on during the drive, I look at my phone again and I'm like, I'm sorry, what? And I told my mom and she's like, no way.
Yeah, it was honestly a very sad match because you know how Rafa is. He literally refuses to retire under any circumstances. And, you know, he is one to usually, like, show a poker face, stand strong for whatever he's feeling inside. Because, let me tell you, this is an injury-ridden man. He has been through everything throughout his career.
Especially that foot. It was that foot, again, that was bothering him. That's been a chronic injury throughout his career. And yeah. He was really struggling with it today, which was sad to see.
Yeah, and, like, even the video clips, like, you could see the pain in his face. He even had to stop a couple of times, not of course in the middle of a point, but like between points, he would kind of go off to the side and have to lean on the wall, which is, you know, to be feeling that kind of pain. Usually the thing is with like injuries on court, like usually the adrenaline overpowers it somewhat, but the fact that he was feeling it that much shows how bad it was. But still, it's not a reason to discount Shapo's victory because after all, you can't get to the quarterfinals after playing one match, so he definitely did something here. Not sure what, but he did something. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
He missed his hairdresser appointment.
Exactly. But kudos to him for rising to the occasion, like, coming back after getting breadsticked in the first set. And still, like, the whole, like, idea of, like, I'm about to, like, I could beat Rafael Nadal on clay. Like, that's still, like you still do have to manage that and be able to deal with that. So yes, kudos to Shapo, but at the same time, really hope that Nadal can be healthy before the French Open. His ranking will drop to number 5. And that does mean that he and Djokovic could meet in the quarterfinal stage of the French Open. So it's a big deal. But I did think it was weird that the ATP posted, like, video clips of, like, Nadal, like, visibly in pain on their Instagram and, like, captioned it, like, hard to watch, like, get well soon. I was like, come on. Like, I don't know. I felt a little weird that they were posting that.
I didn't even think about it. I wouldn't have known that he was injured if I hadn't seen it, which is good. But, I mean, I guess you're right. Like, I should have been able to find sources, like, somewhere written, you know, somewhere more, like, less casual, I guess.
Yeah, it was, like, a weird kind of clickbait. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just felt a little... But at the end of the day, like, let's just hope that he gets well soon. But as for the quarterfinals, we have Djokovic versus Felix and Shapo versus Ruud. We haven't really talked about Casper Ruud yet much. He was having a pretty mid-clay season, especially for his standards, up until now. Hopefully, you know, getting that win today over Brooksby, and, you know, getting into the later stages is gonna give him some momentum. I definitely see him as the favorite against Shapovalov. But if we're talking about who we think will make it through, I just think it's gonna be Djokovic. Like, there is still that unpredictability factor because he hasn't played that many matches, but, you know, those zero unforced errors, also because Felix and Ruud haven't been looking great lately. Shapo's also been unpredictable. Djokovic is weirdly the guy to rely on right now, even though he's played the least matches. But I would definitely throw Casper Ruud into the mix as well, just because of his comfort on clay.
Agreed. So now, finally, we have the bottom half of the ATP draw on this side. We have Jannik Sinner, the 10th seed, Stefanos Tsitsipas, the 4th seed, Christian Garin, and And then our notable results here and kind of upsets are the fact that Krajinovic, he upset Andrei Rublev, the sixth seed, in round two pretty handedly. So, you know, I'm not sure if this was like a Krajinovic moment where he goes crazy with the upsets, or like, you know, our occasional Andrei flop. We will never know. But doesn't matter because Krajinovic lost in the next round anyways. And then Khachanov, he upset PCB, the 15th seed, but then fell to Tsitsipas. But I just want to note that because PCB losing in... Oh, never mind. I was going to say losing in front of a home crowd, but I forgot we're not in Spain anymore. So forget that all. And then Christian Garin with some amazing tennis, and as he should, being the clay king that he is, finally so glad to see him find his form. Because honestly, the thing is, like, when he flops during the hardcore or grass season, I'm just like, it's okay. We just have to wait for the dirt, and then he'll be fine. So now he's finally doing fine, as expected. So he defeated Emil Ruusuvuori in the first round, counting this as an upset because I'm upset. And then he defeated Marin Cilic. You know, Marin is a classic. He took out Cameron Norrie, the ninth seed. And the only other... Cam Nori is the only other seeded player, or was the only other seeded player in Zverev's little cave, you know, because it's too respectful to call it a corner. So, yeah.
Yeah. We're going to throw an honorable mention to Dominic Thiem, who lost to Fabio Fognini in the first round. I really hope Domi can find, you know, eventually some momentum, because he's still young. Like, he still has, I think, tennis, like, to give. Like, I miss him on tour.
Is he really that young?
You're right, but I think it's too early for him to just be done. Like, I would like to see him like a little second half of career resurgence. Looking to the quarterfinals, we've got Jannik Sinner, the 10th seed, versus Stefanos Tsitsipas. I don't think enough people are talking about Sinner this year. He has been consistent. Like, he has been playing pretty well. He's been getting to deep stages of tournaments. I would say Steph is looking stronger just because of his, you know, he's so good on the clay. He made the Madrid semis, and Jannik, you know, he is, yes, he's had a consistent year, but also those mini flop moments. But, you know, he's, I think both of them could honestly make it out of this one, but, Tsitsipas tends to be doing better in the later stages of tournaments, especially on the clay. Then we have Christian Garin versus Alexander Zverev. I mean, I know we would love to see Garin make it out of here, and it does seem possible. He did play quite well today, but, you know, it's also Zverev. You know, he's also been playing okay. He had a good week in Madrid. So I guess we would highlight Tsitsipas as the favorite for this half. But honestly, the other semifinalists, we, like, the head and the heart are at odds of who we would want to see there. Thank you so much for joining us, and that is Game, Set, and Match for today.
If you liked this episode, please let us know and stay tuned for more. We'll be providing you all the coverage of upcoming tennis and, of course, all the tea on tour.
Email us at holdontoyourracket@gmail.com for any questions, and leave a rating on whatever platform you're listening on.
Hold On to Your Racket is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts.
Follow us on social media at holdontoyourracket on Instagram and at @HOTYR_tennispod on Twitter. Our next episode will be released as Rome wraps up and Roland Garros approaches.
And remember, my name is Josefina.
And my name is Shravya.
And if you enjoyed this episode, make sure to hold on to your racket until next time.